My name is Clayton, and welcome to another episode of the Watch Dog Podcast. I'm a professional dog runner and watch enthusiast talking to his pals about dogs and watches. How is everybody doing? Thank you so much for listening. You know I appreciate it. And he's back to talk about the microbrand Mount Rushmore Revisited, Formex, and all that good stuff. My buddy Keith. Keith, thanks again for taking the time to join me. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me back.
Of course. Well, so on President's Day weekend this year, we were festive and we did the microbrand Mount Rushmore competition. We each did a separate one and then we kind of came together to do a collective Mount Rushmore that included, I think we're getting this right, Zelos, Laurier, Oak and Oscar, and then Formex. So our rules were that we had to at least have some hands-on experience with this brand or, you know, even own them, even better. Neither of us really had much hands-on with Formex. I think you had at least seen one in person. I never had, but we threw Formex on there anyway, just because, you know, they'd come up so much and we wanted to pick them. We weren't even sure they were a micro brand. So, but we ultimately put them on our collective Mount Rushmore. I did an Instagram post to promote the episode and I tagged a bunch of brands and Formex, among others, reached out Marcus from Formex and, you know, he thought it was so cool that we were mentioned and he said, well, you know, I don't feel like we actually earned the spot on the Mount Rushmore. So in order to do that, we need to get you some hands-on experience with a Formex. And he asked me, would you like a loaner? And I said, oh gosh, you know, I'd never gotten a loaner. I'd always been a little conflicted, to be honest, because, you know, I don't want to feel like I owe a brand something. And he was totally cool. It was really casual. And I said, well, I really like the Reef GMT, the black dial, I guess it is. It looked kind of brown to me, brown black dial with the rose gold gilt hints. And he said, okay. And after their DC microbrand show, he sent it out and I got it for about a week, week and a half, and now you have it. So I'm excited to talk about it.
We're influencers now.
I know. It's official. And, you know, he was super sweet. I can't remember the name of the show now in DC, but he said, you know, our table was busy and it was all due to your podcast. And I said, oh yeah, I'm sure. He actually did talk to the folks at Laurier and told them about the podcast as well. So, cause I know you're a Laurier super fan and I know, we both included them. Well, we included them on our collective Mount Rushmore anyway. I did not have them on mine, but you certainly had them on yours. And I think you're widely known as the Laurier guy in our friend circles. So,
yeah, that's cool. I didn't know he talked to them.
Yeah. Lorenzo and Lauren, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, apparently that was a really fun show. I got to, I talked with him a little bit about it online and he said it was very successful for them, which is awesome. So,
yeah, and I'm going to be going to Wind Up this year. So hopefully they'll both be there in the Chicago one.
Well, why don't we do a wristwatch check? I will break tradition and I will go first. Because usually the host defers, but your wrist check will lead us into the episode. Unless you had anything else to say, we usually don't get to the meat and potatoes this fast.
No, let's get into it.
All right, let's do it. I am wearing the Moser Endeavor Center Seconds Concept Funky Blue. I always say those words out of order, but Moser Endeavor. The concept dial, so it has no indices, no minute track, no branding.
How is it telling the time on that?
Pretty easy. Yeah, it's really pretty no easy. Problem. Okay. Yep, really no problem. I'm able to check it. It's fairly accurate. It's lost about, I set it on Thursday. It's Monday now. It's lost about like 15 seconds, I think. So not like, you know, world-class timekeeping or anything. Not like, you know, even my Rolex Air King, you know, is amazing compared to the timekeeping on this. But it's also, I haven't done anything super active in it yet. I am usually the guy who says, you know, wear your watches. And we had a dog boarding with us up until today. And when I went out hiking with her, she has to stay on leash because she's actually recovering from an ACL injury. and I'm not allowed to let her do too much. So I have her on leash, and I don't know. I was nervous about wearing the Moser out with her. I will now that I just have my dog again to go and hike with. but I must say I'm kind of babying it, which is it was pre-owned, but I mean unworn. I don't think the person wore this watch. I mean, the strap, while comfortable, doesn't look like it was really worn. The case has no scratches on it. It's a white gold case, fully polished bezel, and I mean it's clean. It still looks clean to me. I bet if I really examined it, there would be some scratches on there. But
that sounds like a 94 percenter on Toppers,
right?
Yeah, that's my guess.
Yeah, I would say it's higher than that. But just to cover themselves, I think they'll say 94. But it's really probably like a 98, to be honest.
Yeah.
My first real... Now, I've handled some high-end watches, like friends have owned. But in terms of owning one, this is, you know, by far the the most expensive watch I've ever owned. I did own a Submariner, but you can't really compare the two. One's a dive watch, and the bezel action is phenomenal. And this is, you know, it's a dress watch essentially with a, you know, non-screw down crown, beautiful movement. I mean, the movement is just bonkers. I really am going to, one of these days, just wear it upside down backwards so I can see that movement. Cause as beautiful as this dial is, I mean, the movement is equally as stunning in a different way. So the funky blue Fume dial really just is a chameleon. I was saying on Watch Soup last night, it really just kind of adapts to whatever lighting you're in.
Okay.
I don't know if you saw my Instagram post, but you could actually see the clouds in the sky, and it actually looked like a blue sky with clouds. It kind of looked like the Simpsons opening because of the blue dial. It was actually a cloudy day, but the blue dial made it look like a blue sky with clouds. It was really cool. It's awesome. I mean, in a darker room, it looks almost like Arctic, cold, deep water, like a really beautiful blue. And then in direct light, it has a sunburst effect. I'll stop gushing about it now, but I'm pretty, I'm pretty over the moon about it. All right. So you are wearing tell us all about it, please.
I am wearing the Formex Reef GMT, believe it or not. I got it. Let's see. We're recording on a Monday. I got it on, I don't even remember now. Maybe Tuesday. So maybe it's been a week. I wore it to work one day. I wore it meeting my wife out for dinner one night. I wore it around today. So I've got to spend some time with it. And it's honestly, taking it out of the box, it just really, really impressed me. I don't know what I was expecting, but it was better than what I was expecting. So it's been fun to wear it.
That was my first impression also. And yeah, I just, like I said, I love that rose gold.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. The hands. It's just really sharp, and you know, anyone who knows Formex, and we'll get into the history of the brand a little bit and we'll break it down. I don't really want to do like a spec sheet. I mean, I'll put the link to the website, and if you're so inclined, and I encourage you to go and check them out on the website. We're going to do more of an organic, just by feel sort of assessment of our experiences. I wore it for about a week, a couple days more. You've had it for about a week now. So I think it's enough time to at least, you know, give our honest opinions, good and bad, about it. But the thing I was struck by was, yes, it feels like a higher end watch. And this was a loaner. So this had been around to content creators. So, you know, he warned, you know, it comes with some wear and tear. He actually sent an email saying that it's not a COSC movement. It's actually not even a regulated movement. Still kept pretty good time though. I kept track of it. It only like gained or lost, I can't remember, like 5 seconds a day. Not terrible. But it did have some scratches, but I thought it was in pretty good shape overall.
Yeah, you kind of gave me the heads up about that, and I thought it was a way better condition than I was expecting.
Right. So. Right. Yeah. The bracelet and strap tech was the thing that just completely struck me when I took it out of the box. and started playing around with the bracelet and strap. And, you know, I've said I'm a huge fan of the Cartier Santos and that sort of quick system, toolless system to change from the bracelet to the strap. It's just a push button and it comes right out. You know, the Formex, obviously not to that level, but still right up there, a notch below, I would say. And the leather straps, so it's a deployant. He included a leather strap and a rubber strap with this package that he sent us. Deployant strap, but there's also a ratcheting sort of micro adjust on the deployant. So if you can't get a great fit with a deployant strap, you know, it's maybe you wish it was kind of, there was an in-between hole option so you get a perfect fit. This system solves all that, ratchets to get that perfect fit. I've never seen that on a leather strap at any level. And correct me if I'm wrong, it might exist, but I've never heard of it or seen it anyway. And, you know, so it's just incredible tech on these watches.
Yeah, and going back real quick, you were talking about the rose gold standing out. I am a lover of rose gold and black combination, and I've never owned a watch with that combination because, you know, I'm not going to shell out the money right now for actual rose gold, and there's not a ton of other options, so I really like this choice of the rose gold and black because I do think those indices and hands really stand out. You know, I'm a fan of the Yachtmaster rose gold and black that I'm sure I'll never have. But I like the color. And one thing I should note is this is a bigger watch than I would ever wear. I'm a fan of small, light watches. So this is, especially on the bracelet, you know, I lasted 10 minutes on the bracelet, put it on the leather strap and it's okay, but it's still not great for me. So I would love, you know, I'm interested in the 39 Essence. I would love like a black and rose gold combination for that. I think that would look really nice. I mean, I love the green one of that. I love they have Malachi dial. They have a lot of good options already, but I'd like to see that on the Essence as well.
Yeah. So I picked this watch because of the colorway, really. It's my favorite colorway of any watch they do, even though I am not a big GMT fan. It's not a complication I particularly like to use. I don't really need it in my day-to-day life, so it's not a watch I'm drawn to. I've bought a few, and they always end up being sold. I also, if I'm going to have a rotating bezel, I like to have a ratcheting dive bezel. The GMT bezel just doesn't do it for me. I do use bezels, timing bezels to time things, but ultimately it's just a fidget spinner for me and I like to play with it. And I don't get the same satisfaction. It sounds like a silly reason to not like GMTs, but I'm a silly person. So what can I say?
Yeah, I'm the same way for sure.
Yeah. But I picked this one anyway, and you know, what's really cool, if you like this colorway, you know, and we'll get to it, you can mix and match the bezels, of course. Mm-hmm. So I was telling Marcus, you know, if I ever bought one, I would, probably get a diver, but I love this colorway. I wish you did the diver in this colorway. And he said, well, you can always get the 24-hour bezel that matches this watch. And then you get a hint of that. You know, depending on the colorway diver you get, it might look a little off. But so why don't we do it this way? Let's give a little background on Formex if people don't know. And then we can give, like I said, I don't want to read a spec sheet of this watch, but maybe let's give pros, cons. You know, would you buy one of their watches? Why wouldn't you? Let's just break it down that way so we have some structure here. So quick and dirty, everybody thinks, you know, I thought Formex was a newer brand, but they were actually formed in 1999. So Formex history goes back 20 years when two Swiss brothers, both watchmakers and enthusiasts alike, wanted to combine their passion for watches with their love for motorsports. So Formex equals Forme Extreme, a terrible butchering of that, but it means that's French for extreme shape. Inspired by the engineering and mechanics of high-performance racing cars and bikes, the two brothers developed the brand's signature patented case suspension system. So that's pretty cool. That's where that comes from. At least it comes from like a reason, you know, it's, they didn't just do it for a gimmick. Like there's a, there is a real meaning behind it, which is kind of cool. The cushion-like system protects the watch's movement and considerably adds to the comfort on the wrist while giving every Formex a distinctive, robust, and sporty look. And then this is just reading here, where we are going. And this is all on the Formex website. I will put a link to that in the show notes. Over the following 15 years, Formex launched over 40 collections of modern timepieces, all featuring the patented case suspension system. The brand became widely recognized among aficionados of extraordinarily designed sports watches. Yeah, I actually, so the motorsports thing makes sense too, because their old logo was very spark pluggy. It reminded me, not only the name sounded spark pluggy, but also just they had a very industrial logo, which I actually liked.
I much prefer the new logo.
Do you?
I think they really did a good job.
I think I prefer it as well. I think I'm with you there. But I actually, I know a lot of people gave them crap for it. I actually liked it. But I just actually saw an old Essence with the old Formex logo. My friend has one. He has the 43 millimeter, which is huge. Okay. But it was cool to check out the suspension system. And it's a, you know, the, I showed him the Reef GMT. We got together for lunch and I showed it to him. And yeah, even they were innovative on straps and bracelets then. Like they've stepped it up a whole other level with these new watches compared to that one. I think he's had that one for a few years now. So
yeah, a friend of mine offered, he has an Essence 39. He offered for me to borrow it. I always get weird about borrowing stuff from people. I don't want to ruin their watch or something happens to it. But maybe I'll take him up on it because I would like to try the suspension system to see what that's like.
Yeah, Sanjay and I have talked about this before, I think on a live stream of his. You know, if somebody is lending you a watch, they expect you to wear it. So if I lend you a watch, wear it. So they wouldn't, if I didn't want you to scratch my watch, I wouldn't give it to you.
Yeah. And if someone were to let me borrow a watch, I mean, they couldn't pick someone better. I mean, I wore my Laurier, you know, probably every third day for like a year. And there was like no scratches on it when I was done. None on even the plexiglass crystal. You know, I'm just very careful with watches. So,
yeah, I always tell people, lend me a watch and beware, because I try to be careful, especially with someone else's watch, of course. But I was examining my Air King recently and there's some scratches on that baby. There's a good one on the link. I have no idea how I did it, but I don't, worrying about scratching a watch, I find stressful actually, and takes away from enjoying the watch. Even this Moser I was telling you, I am babying it a little bit and I don't like that. So I just have to get over it. And that's, you know, the honeymoon phase. Obviously I've never owned a watch this expensive, so it's a little, little stressful. I was kind of hoping it did have a few scratches on it. I bought it pre-owned, so I was hoping it was already broken in and I could just jump right in and wear it. But I'm getting there.
Yeah. I feel like the more I own a watch, the more I just don't worry about it so much.
Right. Okay. So that's sort of their background. And then the Reef is only a few years old, and it came out in a dive watch, and then the GMT. The GMT, if I want a GMT, it's going to be a traveler's GMT, and this is a collar GMT. It has the Sellita 330, I believe. So it's not a traveler's GMT, so it doesn't have the jumping hour hand. At this price, I think if I was going to get a GMT, I would probably opt for a traveler's GMT, but I'm totally down for, you know, getting a Formex diver at some point after this experience. How about you?
I've only owned one GMT before this and it was quartz. So I really never set it. Okay. I just had to set it once and then I was done. I don't care about the GMT hand at all, so I didn't worry about setting it. So it actually made it pretty easy to set. I don't have enough experience to know which one I'd prefer. But this, I had no issues with this at all. So I'm kind of like you. I'm not into GMTs. I think that just looks cool to have like a usually a different color, you know, hand. I wouldn't normally go for a GMT, I must say, which is another reason I'm glad I got to check this one out.
All right. So why don't we just describe the watch through our experiences with it? So why don't you go first, since you have it in front of you? Why don't you do pros? I'll do pros. And then we can each do maybe not cons, maybe just niggles or things, you know, that maybe didn't suit us or maybe that could be improved upon.
I mean, to me, I would say the biggest pro to me is the dial. What we've already talked about, the rose gold really standing out. I think everything just like is super high quality. And I would just, like I said before, I was impressed right when I took it out of the box at the quality of it. So that's my first pro, is just the dial and the high quality of it.
Yeah, same with me. It's beautiful. It looks like a higher end watch. I mean, these are not inexpensive. They're about $2,100 USD, but it does give the feeling of a much higher end watch. Kind of a sunburst, beautiful dial. Even with the bezel, it's almost like a brushed bezel. It's beautiful. It's really well done. The major pro for me was the bracelet. I like the bracelet. I did not find it to be too heavy. Now I have a 7-inch wrist. So, and you are, what's your wrist size?
About 6 1/4.
Okay. So smaller than mine. I can understand why you, found it heavy. Obviously I did not get any wrist fatigue from it. I wore it on the bracelet quite a bit. I think through messaging you, I said probably one of the, besides the Seiko Marine Master 300, the other watch that gave me wrist fatigue was the Oris Aquas. I found that watch to be just terribly heavy and uncomfortable. And I did not get this that vibe from this at all. I wore it just fine. But
I was actually going to say that I think maybe this would be better for later on, but I think this really holds up to similar, more established Swiss brands for the price point. Like I would buy this over an Aquas, and I've owned an Aquas. I agree. The Aquas, even the 39, it was just very top heavy and very thick. And for a GMT, this is super thin.
Yeah.
Which is another pro. And, you know, the 39 Essence, I think, is like under 11 millimeters, which is really good. I would say this holds up to similar, you know, priced. And even Oris, you know, the Aquases are more expensive than the Formexes are.
Oh, I'd go for a Formex. You know, I've not been shy about sort of being critical of Oris, and I can just say through owning an Aquas for a while and then having a week and a half with this, like hands down would pick this. 11 and a half millimeters thick, which is, or you could say 11 and a half millimeters thin. I mean, that's remarkably thin. For a GMT, that's awesome. It wore great. The straps they supplied, the leather strap in particular, I'm usually going to pick rubber over leather. I actually liked wearing it on the leather strap a bit more. It was very comfortable. And the tech that they're offering, and you know, you're also getting a COSC regulated movement with these watches, which you're not getting even with the Calibre 400. So I just think they offer tremendous value. The divers, I think you can get a reef diver for about $1,700, I think. So they're not all this expensive. I think this rose gold plated one is a bit more expensive than the others. But I just think they're packing in so much for the price.
Yeah, and I should say that I'm the problem with the watch and why I can't wear a bracelet. You know, I have joint pain in general and it doesn't impact my wrist. So I have to wear like lighter watches.
Yeah.
And the weight on the bracelet was 156, which is way heavier than, you know, anything else I wear. All my current watches are all under 100 grams. And on the leather, it is 100 grams. It worked definitely better for me, but part of it is I'm just not used to owning a watch this big. I wore it actually just on a walk with my dog a couple hours ago, and like in the middle of the walk, it started to bother me. But like, again, that's a me thing. That's most people won't have that issue. So, I wouldn't worry about it if you're on the fence on this watch, and you know, I'm here telling you that it's heavy for me. It probably won't be for you.
Yeah. And if you have, I have a 7-inch wrist, slightly under actually. And I'm relatively weak. I mean, I'm not a very strong person. I can wear it just fine. The Aquas, on the other hand, I had a 43.5 millimeter. That made me feel like I had tendonitis, or like it just did it. It made my wrist hurt in a way a watch has never made my wrist hurt. Even the Marine Master 300, my wrist would get tired. But that Aquas, I don't know if maybe I was allergic to something. It made my wrist hurt. I had to take it off. It was odd. I don't know if it's some sort of reaction or what it was.
And that's unfortunate too, because Oris makes a titanium Aquas. I think they've only had one version of it, and the finishing's really well done on it. You can't even tell it's titanium, and it's so much lighter. I wish they would use that more.
Yeah. Yeah, they do have I think it's just like a gray or slate or charcoal dial. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Titanium Aquas, I could think about. I just wish they included a strap in all models too. If you're going to have an integrated bracelet dive watch, I think there's a reason a lot of brands don't do it, because I'm not sure how much sense it makes. At least like supply a rubber strap, you know, on the house, or incorporate it into the price of the watch instead of upcharging $300 for a strap. Just my opinion, but we don't have to turn this into an Oris bashing. What's another thing you really liked about it?
Let's see. I do agree with you that basically it has anything you could ever want in a bracelet. It articulates really well. The quick release works really well. The on-the-fly micro-adjust works really well. Everything feels really good. Even the clasp, this is actually the first ever deployant clasp I've ever used. So I have nothing to compare it to. But even the click of the clasp is so nice. You could just tell it's high quality. I love the adjustment. I don't know, me personally, again, because it does add bulk, I don't know if I would prefer to wear it on just a regular tang buckle or anything. I didn't have one to try. I don't have a 22 millimeter, so I couldn't try it out. But it works really well. I have a friend who just thinks that this is like, this clasp, the deploying clasp, is like the best one on the market.
Yeah.
And I don't see how anything can beat this, even though I don't have much experience with other deploying clasps. But yeah, everything is just, as you said, it just works out really well.
I think some higher end brands should just hire Formex to make straps and clasps for them. They've nailed it.
And I don't know, you know, what Formex does besides Formex. I think they do some manufacturing for other brands, but I don't know what that entails. So maybe they're already doing that. I would love to know for who, but I don't know the answer to that. So.
Another thing that I absolutely loved was the whole removable bezel. So if you don't know, on the Reef, Diver, and the GMT, you can actually buy different bezels, all of a different colorway. I think they offer like a relief bezel. You know, if you have a gray, let's just hypothetically say you have a gray dial watch and you want to mix it up and get a green bezel instead of the, you know, maybe stainless steel bezel it came with, you can buy one for $185 and switch up the look of your watch. And it's really easy. It's very easy to remove it. So he did send us a full loomed GMT bezel, and I switched them quite a bit because I love loom. I'm a child. I like to shine my flashlight into the full loom and let it shine. So that was really a neat thing. I wasn't sure if I was going to like that trick, but man, you can buy one of these and then, you know, maybe you have enough money to buy a couple extra bezels. It's really, really fun. And just, again, another example of how they're kind of going above and beyond with the innovation.
Yeah, I'll say I'm the opposite of you. I don't like the customized stuff. I'm not into Loom. I actually just tried popping off the bezel earlier today just because I forgot to do it because I couldn't imagine wearing a different bezel besides this one because it goes so well.
Yeah.
But I'm someone like, you know, when I buy a watch and I buy a strap for it, I really make sure to choose the right strap and then I never take it off that strap.
Oh, okay.
Again, you know, if that works for me. So, hey, I'm not really a customizer, but the actual mechanism does work really well.
Yes, that works. It's super easy. I bite my fingernails and I was still able to get it off, no problem.
And if you're like me, and you don't want to, you know, pop off bezels and put a different one on, you can never tell that even does this.
Right.
You know, if you don't actually try and do it. So.
It does not come off easily. I never got the impression that one accidental little bump could knock it off. It's very sturdy. When you turn the bezel, you can't tell that it could be easily removed. So yeah, you don't certainly have to do that, but I thought it was kind of a cool option. And I'm not a big like modder either. I will, you know, switch straps quite a bit. Another thing I am scared to death to do on this Moser, by the way, I'm going to cover it in bubble wrap or something before I do it. But the strap that comes with this is very comfortable. But so that's just a really cool. Yeah, the mechanism, I guess, if you are so inclined to do it, it's just another kind of fun option that they offer that really no other brands are doing. All right, so we covered the things we like about it, I think, sufficiently. Now let's get to the moans and niggles, as Jody from Just One More Watch might say. What's a couple things that I know you mentioned the heft of it on bracelet. How about anything else that maybe you think could be improved or that you know didn't necessarily care for?
Yeah, this is a small, and I was curious what you thought of this. What do you think of the GMT hand with just the tip of the arrow being the accent color?
It would be nice to have it. I more rose gold on there, the better for me. So yeah. that would have been pretty cool.
I was going to say the opposite. Well, this definitely helps with legibility and that's probably what they're going for, but yeah. I would have liked to see the whole GMT arrow be a different color.
Okay.
Be in this case, it's red. In other models, it's like whatever the accent color, I think, you know, there's like, they have like their version of the Batman and the exit color is blue or something like that. I would have liked to see how the whole arrow would look. The tip of the arrow being red, it's a little awkward, I guess. But maybe if I saw the whole arrow being red, I'd want it back to the way they have it.
So oh yeah, I would not want the whole arrow red. I don't think. No. I would like it to just kind of go with the rest of the watch. So. I don't know that I would like the whole thing red.
Okay.
It might look a little... now, red does go well on that dial, I will say that. But
yeah, there's the word GMT is in red also.
Right. So, yeah, I don't know. I think I do like the tip being red, actually. I have to think about that. I have to look at some pictures of it.
Yeah.
So the one thing, and I don't know if it was just on this one, since it's a loaner model and it's been around the block a few times, I found the crown actually like a little sharp. It'll like bite you a little bit when you're interacting with it. I don't know if you've had that sensation, but when I was, you know, winding the watch or, you know, setting the time, I noticed like the bottom of the crown was kind of, wasn't cutting me or anything, but it was a bit sharp, I felt.
I did not notice that at all, actually.
Interesting. I was wondering if you would. Yeah. And then I would run my fingers across it and just, so I don't know if like on a, you know, production model you buy, that would be an issue. And clearly it wasn't an issue for you. So maybe I'm just sensitive.
I'm turning the crown right now just to see. I guess it might be a little sharper than what I'm used to, but it wasn't, it didn't jump out at me, I will say.
All right, how about another moan?
You know, you have much more experience with watches than I do, so I'll defer to you. The GMT I owned did not have the rotating bezel. It was the Grand Seiko SPG N003, which is reminiscent of the Explorer 2. So it just had the fixed steel bezel on there. I found this bezel a bit difficult to turn when it was on my wrist. I feel like I'm getting used to it. I don't know if you could hear. I love the sounds of watches, so I don't know if you could hear this.
Yep.
But I feel like I'm getting used to it, and I'm able to turn it a little better. So maybe it was just me. But yeah, when I went back to my Seiko and started turning that bezel, it was way easier to turn. But I mean, how often do you have to turn a GMT bezel anyways? I would probably never use this to track a third time zone.
Right.
So I would keep it as is. But, you know, like you said before, it's a fidget spinner more than anything. So I wouldn't choose this as my go-to fidget spinner, which I could probably use less fidgeting anyways. Annoy people less. So, but yeah, this is one thing that jumped out at me.
Well, GMT bezels, you know, are bi-directional also. Mm-hmm. So they have a different feel than like a ratcheting dive bezel, mm-hmm. right? So like I said before too, it's not as satisfying to me. And I actually thought the bezel action was fine on this watch, but I've owned a few. I owned the Tudor Diet Pepsi, if you will, for a little while. Tudor has amazing, probably some of the best bezel action in the business. Black Bay 58, they're 60 click as opposed to 120 click, but oh, they're just so good. Tudor bezel action is pretty amazing. And it still didn't do anything for me on that watch. So it's a different feel than if you're used to dive bezel for sure. But yeah, I thought it was fine bezel action. I guess for me, the other, con would be that, you know, it's not a traveler's GMT. You know, that is one of my favorite functions on a watch. You know, I've had a couple, 9F85 from Grand Seiko, 9F85 quartz. And those have the jumping hour hand, which is so even for time changes, you don't have to stop the watch and set it again. You can just unscrew the crown and move that. And that's how you do the date as well. You just do that jump, you jump the hour hand, and that's how the date changes too. So mm-hmm. I love that function. And that's one of the things I really enjoy. If I were to enjoy anything about a GMT, I think it's that. So, and you know, they call it a true GMT. That's what they call a true GMT. so I wish for the price that this, you know, was that if I were to buy one. But again, I'm not a GMT guy. So, you know, we may be the wrong people to talk about this because neither of us are major GMT fans. But that would be my only other complaint, especially because this one is, this one came out before, you know, the Miyota that like Jack Mason has used now that is a traveler's GMT for around $1,000. You know, a couple other watches have it now too. So I think this watch was actually released before that craze. And I think it even came out before the, you know, the Seiko 5 GMTs. Those are collar office GMTs. So
yeah, Laurier, for their GMT, they use a Soprod movement, but they're moving over to the Miyota.
Okay.
When they sell out of the Soprod movements. So it will add some thickness to their watch because the Soprod's pretty thin. But I think they're doing it to, one, they use Miyota and everything else, but two, it's going to lower the cost of their watch. So I'll be interested to you know, I see a lot of the discussions online, and I think that's what you said. It's a traveler's GMT, and I see discussions online like, should I get the Soprod? Should I wait for the Miyota? So there's, you know, Laurier fans going back and forth,
right?
Which one they should get? But yeah, I mean, obviously when the Seiko came out with their GMT, that was a huge deal. I wasn't aware of the Miyota one when it came out. But yeah, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, if you are into micro brands and GMTs, it's a great time to be alive. they are buying up these GMT movements from, you know, Seiko and Citizen. And, you know, I think this year we've already seen a bunch and we're going to see a lot more. So it's a great time to be into watches in general.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's really the only negatives I can think of. I mean, I was just overall really impressed. And this is as objective as I can be. I've owned probably 150 to 200 watches, different watches in my day, probably. And this is a very impressive package. The pricing is, I think you're getting so much for the money. Now, you know, $2,100 is not inexpensive. Like I said, it's an expensive watch, but relatively speaking, compared to the other watches that, you know, we see all the time, it's in that affordable range for all that you're getting, in my opinion. You know, you can buy, Tudor, they just released the white dial, opaline dial of their GMT. That they didn't update the clasp to the T-Fit, which I think is a great clasp. So you're paying over $4,000 for that GMT, and it has, a fairly standard clasp, but I think only 3 micro adjust. So look what Formex is giving you for half the price. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. And cost certified too. Is Formex on your radar now after getting to experience this watch? Is Formex a brand that you would consider buying?
Yeah, in all honesty, they were already on my radar. You know, I was already looking at the 39 Essence as a possible purchase. And I would certainly recommend this to someone too. And that continues to be on my radar. Again, I'm a little worried about the 39 Essence on the bracelet, how much that weighs. But there's also strap options too. That should be much more wearable for me, but either way, that just kind of made me a bigger fan of the brand than I already was, in all honesty. So, it's definitely one of those. I keep a list of all possible future watch purchases, so I can make an informed decision. I always keep an ongoing list, and it's on there. So, we'll see what happens.
How many watches are on this list right now?
That's a good question. Probably I'd say around 10, maybe 10 to 15. That way, you know, when I buy watches rarely, I like to make an informed decision and look at all my options. People were asking me on the Engineer Wannabe live stream on Saturday what my top 3 watches were. And I think I put that in my top 3. So,
and which dial color?
I like the green. I like the malachite, which is, was a limited edition. I believe they're doing 100 each year of the malachite dial. So one of those two, we'll see what else they come out with. They actually just released a kind of, I don't know what word they use for the dial, but it was like this, maybe like a mother of pearl blue. I don't know what the exact.
It's sharp. I saw it. Yeah. It's really nice.
Yeah. With the rose gold indices in hands.
Right.
That sold out really quickly. I'm looking forward to more versions of the watch just to see what else they come up with. But yeah, I go green or malachite. What about you?
I'll be getting a diver at some point. I think for sure. I'm hooked. Yep, they're a great brand. I'm convinced. I'd always, like you, kind of always been intrigued by them and heard great things. People who own them and who've experienced them, and just watching. You know, we watch a lot of YouTube content, and you can see for yourself when they're doing the kind of things with the suspension system. Even if you do think that's a big gimmick, yeah, I tried it on my friends, and I don't know. Maybe it's because it wasn't sized for me. Also, he has 7.5-inch wrists, so it was gigantic on me with the bracelet on. But it's really cool. Well,
when I'm interested in a watch, I tend to watch a lot of reviews on it and read a lot of reviews, and it's. You know, people are split. Some people think they really like the suspension system, and some people, it doesn't really do anything for them. So it kind of just maybe depends on the person.
It makes sense, though, in the blurb I read there that they're, motorsports enthusiasts and, motorcycle enthusiasts and stuff, and their suspension systems on those. So that's kind of cool that they incorporated something they're passionate about into the watch. So I have a newfound respect for it. I did not know that before this. So that's pretty cool. Yeah, I actually really like that burgundy dial of the Essence 39. I showed it to my wife and she said it looks like somebody would wear that who also wears Drakkar Noir cologne. I said, what? Really? She's like, yep, that's the first thing I thought of. I don't like it. I was like, oh, weird.
Well, I love a good burgundy dial. I have a Ming, the burgundy dial.
Yes. Yeah.
Ming, and which I love. I've seen, you know, video and pictures of this red dial. It might be too light red for me, okay, depending on if the light's hitting it, but it's kind of hard to tell.
But I think it's nice, despite what she says. Maybe I'll, if I do ever buy that, I will get a bottle of Jacquard Noir and just douse myself in it and then try to give her a hug and see what she does then. All right. So before we end here, you know, they were on our Mount Rushmore, but Watch Crunch actually ran, you know, March is the March Madness time, right, with the college basketball tournament. And they did sort of a Watch Crunch micro brand tournament with, 64 of them. And some I've never heard of and some that I definitely did not even consider micro brands. What did you think of this tournament?
It's interesting. They did it last year as well. And it's interesting because of the brands that they have on. Like, for example, they have the Sartori Biard, which is a much more like low volume, independent. Like he hand does the dials himself. And then you have someone like a Laurier who, you know, sources their parts, and has it built, you know, somewhere else. So it's a mishmash of a lot of brands who, I guess you can consider a micro brand, but are very different from one another. So it's interesting to see how that plays out on the voting.
Yeah. So I have the website up here. Before we talk about some of the matchups and who ended up winning, they did some organizer observations. I thought I would read these really quick. So kind of like you said, the tournament was not kind to avant-garde brands. None proved popular, all losing in the first round. Ditto for whimsy. Folks seemed to like them, but opted for the more traditional styles each time, except with Studio Underdog. Artisan dials, Lundis Blue, I'm going to totally butcher that, Sartori Billard, Atelier Wen, etc., all lost early on. My friend has an Atelier Wen, by the way. I got to check that out. That was really cool. Anne Ardain is the only one who made a dent, but it is not surprising given their popularity comparatively.
People, yeah, Anne Ardain popularity really took off.
Yeah,
the last couple of years.
Yep, definitely. People value availability. Similar to last year, being able to go on the brand site and order today weighed heavily for some voters. As much as we can do to explain why batch or time release models are necessarily for some, it does not matter, which is fair. And then seeding. If we do a tournament in 2024, I think I will get away from random seeding per division. The randomization, while fair, did create some big matchups early on. I believe a more fair way would have been to use Watch Crunch popularity. Again, more on that later. American-based brands, while strongly represented, only had Laurier making the final eight.
Let me just say, so Laurier, I don't know, I'm going right into it, but Laurier went ahead versus head-to-head versus Baltic. And they're two brands that are always talked about because they're both, you know, vintage-inspired brands. Similar price point. Baltic gets way more press. You know, Hodinkee writes articles about Baltic. They do not write articles about Laurier, for example.
Right.
It would have been really cool as a Laurier super fan to see them beat Baltic, but I knew that was a tough one for them.
Well, let's talk about the brands that we sort of highlighted in our Mount Rushmore, the brands that before we get to the ultimate results and why we're talking about this in the first place. Well, an observation I had, Squale is on here. I guess I never considered Squale to be a micro brand. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
I was surprised they were on here. And Formex actually beat them. Zelos, they made it to the final. Did they make it to the final four? Yes, they made it to the final four. So Zelos, again, the I don't know if you listened to my last podcast, but I'm off of that Zelos Timekeepers Facebook page. Those guys are kind of mean. So I don't need it. Yeah, they came out and voted on Watch Crunch, that's for sure. And so Laurier, they made it to the quarterfinals?
Yeah. So Baltic made it to the final four,
yep,
beating Laurier to get there.
And then how about Oak and Oscar? They won in the opening round and they lost in the second round to Notice. Mm-hmm. Neither of us mentioned them. Nevada Gretchen, my friend has a Nevada Gretchen. And he brought it to, we got together last week when I showed him the Formex and he showed me his. Man, that was an impressive watch. It was one of the chronographs. Really? I can't remember the model number. I was really impressed with it. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, you know what? Their name didn't ring a bell to me. And then I looked them up and literally everyone, you know, all the YouTubers I like, they've done a video on that. Somehow they're all over the place and I just completely missed it.
Oh yeah, I'm surprised. Maybe, they're everywhere.
Yeah, maybe their designs just didn't stick out to me and so I never clicked on it. But yeah, I had to do a double take. I had to look them up.
They're one of those zombie brands. They existed in the 60s, 70s. Okay. Quartz crisis killed them and somebody bought the IP and revived it. So
I mean, they beat Helios, which I mentioned on our last episode.
Yep, they're huge. There's so my family's coming to visit and they want to go to Newport, Rhode Island. There is a watch store in Newport that has all these like crazy brands. They actually have Speak Marin. They have some really cool brands, but they also have Nevada Gretchen. So I'm excited to go and check some out. I know they make that Pac-Man watch that a few of my friends have bought, the diver where the indices kind of look like Pac-Man. It's based on a vintage watch. I think it was released in the 60s. I think it's called the Depth Master. That's the official name, but the nickname is the Pac-Man because the indices look like Pac-Man. But it wears small from what I've heard. My friend John bought one and he has a little bigger wrist than me and he felt like it was a little too small, but he liked it. But so Nevada Gretchen, I was really impressed with that chronograph. Winding it, it's a manual wind. Honestly, it wound better than the Speedmaster I had. The 3861 movement, maybe it was just the one I had, for every full wind, it would unwind halfway. It was just such a chore to wind. This Nevada Gretchen was butter. It was it was awesome to wind. So I was very impressed to check one of those out. Let's see, who else here? Who else did I pick? Traska, they made it to, they got knocked out by Zelos in the Sweet 16. So Traska made it to the Sweet 16. Ming made it to the Elite 8.
Yeah, I did not have them on my list because they're one of the ones that was like, are they a micro brand? Are they in more, can you classify them as independent? I think I would have liked them to see them beat Ann Ordain. It's interesting. Ann Ordain, their dials are really nice. I've seen them in person. They really stand out. But their designs, are pretty, what's the word I'm looking for? Ho-hum, maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's but because that their dials stand so much, they kind of have to be that way. Whereas Ming, I mean, I just like their design language way more. And they have the cool dials to go on top of it. So I would have liked them to see them beat Ann Ordain, but I completely understand that Ann Ordain's popularity is really high right now.
So let's talk about the brand of the day here, Formex, and their sort of run to the championship, because spoiler alert, they did win this thing. Real quick, I want to just say how many people voted in this. The tournament generated almost 30,000 votes. And then it goes through an average of the votes received in each round, but that's pretty cool. 30,000 votes on this thing. So a pretty large sample size. So for Formex to win something like this, it's pretty cool. So let's just go through in the, first round, they battled NTH. I've handled NTH. My friend, again, my local friend John here, who has many, many watches. he will listen to this. He's loaned me a couple NTH. They're really impressive. They're built like tanks. That was one brand I should have actually thought about going onto the Mount Rushmore, but for whatever reason, I overlooked them. There's just too many brands. But yeah, I was very impressed with NTH, but Formex knocked them off. Have you ever handled one?
I have not. You know, NTH, when I think of them, I think the first time I ever saw them was right when I started getting into watches. And I didn't, you know, I didn't yet know that they were ripping off their hands. They use the snowflake hands on some of their models. I didn't know that they were ripping off a brand at first.
Yeah.
Until I looked into it a little bit. But that's what I think of when I see them. But yeah, I know they were all over the place a few years ago. I haven't kept much track of them since then.
Yeah, I think, I think Long Island Watch is an AD for them. Oh, yeah. I think Watch Gauge, a few places. But yeah, they're as far as build quality goes, I was very impressed. Design, yeah, they're a little derivative here and there. But build quality, yeah, they're just a big, sturdy divers, I would say.
Yeah, I remember they would talk about how thin their divers were. Mm-hmm. At that time, they were known for being like super, super thin.
And then in the next round, the second round, they took on Squally, who, again, I'm very surprised that they're considered a micro brand. I feel like if I posted a Squally on that League of Micro Brands Facebook page, I would get a strongly worded note from the admin telling me why Squally was not a micro brand.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But anyway, they're on here. They beat Unimatic in the first round, Squally. So, and then, you know, a formidable opponent who also is very well known for a GMT, Monta, Formex and Monta. That's a big boy. They actually have the number of votes here. Formex won pretty handily, 316 to 202 in this round. Were you surprised by that?
Yeah. I don't know if I'm surprised that Formex won. I know Monta was on my Mount Rushmore.
Yes,
of micro
that's
brands.
Right, that's right.
I really enjoy both brands. As of today, if I had to purchase one, I'd go Formex. But I really enjoy Monta. Monta gets a lot of love. I didn't realize how much love Formex was getting from people. You know. So it was a pleasant to see that, you know, Formex was able to win this one.
Yeah, they, I wasn't sure if, because Monta does seem to be sort of a darling of the, I would say the influential YouTubers, if you will. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people, like even the 10 and 2 girls, I think were, you know, they're podcasters, but I owned Monta, talked about Monta. I think Monta is thought of as, you know, sort of one of the, probably the higher priced micro brands they're, I like the way their watches look. Like I said, the only hands-on Monta experience I ever had was, I was less than impressed, but it was an older one. So that, and could have just been me that day for whatever reason, just didn't connect with it. But I would love to see one of the new SkyQuest, the white dial SkyQuest is really cool. I actually like the warm tones on the bezel too, of the colors.
Oh, really?
They use.
Okay.
Yeah. I like it. I'm into it. So it was interesting to see that Formex handled them quite easily in this round.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about white and gilt. I feel like gilt always goes better with black, but
I mean, like it on that. I'm with you there, but I do like it on that white dial for whatever reason. So then in the next round, in the Elite Eight, they took on another micro brand darling that like About Effing Time has talked about, and a few others. Jody's had them on, Studio Underdog with the famous watermelon chronograph. They do a few other food-based colorways, cookies and cream, I think they do, a few other things. And they also, Formex, beat them 357 to 184 in terms of votes, so... Again, pretty big blowout here.
Yeah, Studio Underdog is just the opposite of the style I look for in a watch. I love brands trying new things, but it's just that I'm into more of a classic style than what they provide. I'm actually surprised because the designs are so divisive that, you know, how popular they got.
But again, it, like I was reading and their observations about the way people voted, Studio Underdog, they go on sale and they sell out right away. And also you have to wait months to get them. Mm. Like I got an email from them the other day that pre-orders go on sale again in May and then you don't get it till like the end of the year. So that turns me off By the time I might order one, and then, you know, by the time November comes, I'm over it. I forgot I ordered it. I don't like it anymore. you know, so especially on a divisive watch like that, where you might like it one day and then the next day, you know, it's not your style anymore. Mm-hmm. I think they are kind of fun, but I don't know that I'd buy one. I'm drawn to kind of the quirky, or it definitely an original design. And one thing I do like that George Bamford has pointed out on About Effing Time is the chronograph hand does not like go through the middle of the logo like it does on just about every watch. The way he staggered the Studio Underdog logo, it goes right in the middle of the words. So you can still see the logo perfectly. It's not cut off by the chronograph hand. I think that's a really cool touch.
I did not notice that.
Yeah. Check one out. Check a picture out. You can see it. It's really cool. It's a nice touch. Nice design feature there. Okay, so then now we're getting to the final four, and a brand that I know they're huge, and I just don't get it. Baltic. They beat Baltic, but it wasn't a blowout. 371 to 357.
Yeah, very close.
So, and then the final, we can, Anordain's path to the final real quick. So in the first round, they knocked off a brand I've never heard of, Barron's, 337 to 75. They handled Fears easily too, 310 to 148. That's surprising.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the Corona Tokyo, they 282 to 215. And then they beat Ming. That was 263 to 231, so pretty close. And then they beat Zelos in the final four, 315 to 300. I'm surprised the Zelos, mean old Zelos army didn't. come on, guys, where were you?
Do you think that group knows that they've hurt you so much?
I don't know. I'm sure it'll get to them at some point. And then the final. Formex and Anordain, and Formex crushed them, 450 to 247, 200 votes. Wasn't even a contest.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, so Marcus, I think we'll end it here, but Marcus, I just want to thank you for saying all the kind words and being the first brand and probably the last who will ever loan us at the Watchdog Podcast a watch. Is really it's a pinch me, I'm dreaming moment for me, just to have a brand reach out and say they want to send me something, and you know, no obligation. You didn't make it awkward by telling me I had to say something, or you know, you didn't tell me anything at all, which led me to believe I can kind of just say what I want, which I really appreciate, because I'm all about that. I had always felt kind of weird if a brand ever did offer me, I wasn't sure what I would say, because it's just kind of an uncomfortable thing, and probably isn't, but I create scenarios in my head, so I'll invent one where it is awkward, and I'll go with that. So I, you know, but this wasn't awkward at all. It was really great, and the fact that, you know, you let me send it to Keith, you actually encouraged me to send it to Keith to check out too, was really special. So Marcus and Formex, gosh, thank you so much for it. All right, well, Keith, again, thank you so much for joining me, talking about Formex. It was fun. Really great that we both got to experience this watch. And I think a Formex is probably in both of our futures. All right, man. Take care. Thank you.
You too. Thank you.
All right. Bye. And remember, sometimes you're the dog, sometimes you're the hydrant, but at least you're outside. We'll catch you on the next episode of the Watchdog Podcast. See you later.